Radio City. John Grayson and Rob Ross hanging out once again with you. Glad to have you along as we go through what's been going on this week. And, you know, I have to admit, Rob, right off the bat, it has been a vacation week for me. Not the entire one, but took a couple of days off last week and won this. And so here we are, and I have no idea what the hell's going on in the world. And you know what? I couldn't be happier.
Well, you know, then that's a really good way for us to start the show, because what I want to talk about is I want to whet the appetites of our good listeners for next week's show, because next week, folks, we have a very special episode, because it is, in fact, to the date, the 5th anniversary of the first time John and I worked together.
Oh, wow.
When I appeared for the first time, quite accidentally, or by happenstance, call it what you will, on Overnight America, because tomorrow is the 5th anniversary of the closing night of Maxwell's in Hoboken, and the article that I wrote in Popdose is what led to that first appearance on Overnight America, which I still remember most of it. I mean, I remember the night vividly, but I remember most of the conversation.
I'm sure I've probably still got it on tape somewhere, so yeah.
The funny thing about it was just Jeff Giles, who is the, you know, head rabbi of Popdose, emailed me earlier that day saying, listen, I want you to do radio tonight. What are you talking about? And he explained that Popdose had a weekly spot on Overnight America, a show that was on KMOX St. Louis,
yep,
50,000 watts, CBS. And the genial host had seen the article and liked it and wanted to have me on doing this particular installment. So I went, and it was great, and we got along really well. And for those who don't know, John was kind enough to say, hey, let's do this again in a couple of weeks. So we did. And then it got to a point where, you know, the weekly email would go around from Popdose as to who would do that week's appearance. And people were just saying, well, Rob should just do it. I don't feel like doing it. And so John and I got to a point where we basically said, ah, fuck him. You know, I'll do it every week and have done it.
Right.
That way it makes life easier for everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, and 5 great years later, and I have to admit, as much as I loved doing Overnight America, I think I get a bigger kick out of this simply because we are not under any kind of time constraints or self-editing and censorship, and it's a much broader thing that we can do.
Yeah.
Because we're bringing you a full show. And it's a full conversation, because what we would do is we'd get into these conversations and they'd be cut short because of time constrictions. And that's the beauty of doing a podcast and doing Radio City, because what you get is, as we've said many times before, and it can't be emphasized enough, is that it's just a conversation between friends that should be shared with others, because there are other like-minded folk out there. At least I'm of the hope.
That's right. Yeah. So keep passing this around and get the word out for us, and we'll continue to pump it from here as well. And there is one thing, you know, you talked about Maxwell's closing and that, you know, being 5 years ago as of next week, but there's something else that's been going on. And with all of the changing hands, and we talked about this, I think a little while ago, with stadium names and the fact that it's hard to identify with something that isn't an Ebbets Field or isn't, you know, whatever, because they've all got these corporate names hung on them. And that landscape isn't just restricted to the sports world. It's happening everywhere. And things that had, I mean, you can go back as far as, you know, Mann's Chinese Theater, Grauman's Chinese. I mean, that thing's changed names a bunch of times, but it was always the name of the guy who owned it at that moment, you know, that was hung on the door. So it's a little bit different than when some multinational corporation comes in, as just happened with a couple of the main buildings here in town. One was the Peabody Opera House, or is the Peabody Opera House. No, now it's the Stiefel Center. And, you know, before that it was the Kiel, and the place where the Blues play hockey just got a new name this year as well. And so, since you and I both have a connection down to Memphis, Tennessee, I want you to talk a little bit about the Madison Hotel and what it is now, because it's not the Madison Hotel anymore.
It completely threw me for a loop, because I had just been glimpsing at when I wanted to replan my vacation. Just to give a very quick backtrack, I went there 6 years ago in August of 2012. And the Madison is the closest thing Memphis has to a W hotel, you know, very chic, very now, very hip. It became even more so after my stay there. Nevertheless, I had reservations for this year, which I had unfortunately to cancel. But I was just looking, okay, I'm going to try and figure out when I can go back. And I was looking at the website, and the website shows that the hotel itself is under renovation, which to me made me think immediately, and you didn't tell me this when I booked my reservation to begin with?
Would have been handy information to have, yeah.
So, I mean, in just that alone made me think, okay, maybe I'm better off having canceled this particular attempt at going. But the long and short of it is I found an article saying that the Madison was in fact being rebranded. I did not even know that the restaurant connected, the wonderful 83, was actually closed. Everyone got laid off and then closed. The whole thing will be reopened sometime in the fall, probably, under the name of the Hugh Hotel, H-U period hotel, and Hugh's H-U period diner. The person it's being named for is the grandson of the gentleman who essentially founded Overton Park in Memphis, which, okay, that's noble. It's a local person,
right,
slash persons, and I can understand it. But for me, it's taken away what made that hotel special, because when you look at the pictures that they have there, and granted, these are all mock-ups, I'm sure. I saw the dirtiest word you could possibly use right now in an attempt at branding and or rebranding. Brooklyn style.
No.
Brooklyn style, there is no such thing. That is a misnomer and a myth. You know, it's kind of like putting ranch dressing on buffalo wings.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bullshit. And it bothered me because, you know, I wanted to go back and see it, and it's even more refined and even hipper in the cool sense of hip state. You know, I never got to see it with the album covers of Memphis Music in the Elevators, which, of course, had Big Star in there, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. My feeling is that this is not going to be the hotel that I'd stayed in previously. It's just going to be something completely antiseptic and uninteresting. So my next trip to Memphis will in fact be to the Westin, which is the next one up on the chain of Starwood hotels from the W. So there you go.
Yeah.
And it does bother me. It sticks in my craw because it ruined something that to me was perfect. You know, there was a real vibe in that hotel. I mean, for God's sake, my next door neighbor was John Taylor of Duran Duran.
Not bad. Staying.
So, you know, we ran into him in the elevator, and I'm not sure if I ever told that story. If not, I will, because it's a good one. But yeah, I am put off by that. But look, you know, it's the same thing here. We have City Field, not CITY, but CITI, as in Citibank.
Citibank, yeah.
City Field for the Mets. Even though the building itself is based on Ebbets Field, which really sticks in my craw, and all the tributes to the Brooklyn Dodgers in the rotunda, which shouldn't be. The Mets have their own very rich history.
Sure.
You know, it's already a storied franchise. So that to me already just, it's sick. As much as it bothers me, I'm glad Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, albeit probably the first corporate name.
Corporate name. Yeah, but he lived there. He went there. He had an interest in the team, you know.
Yeah. Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, God help me, Yankee Stadium, and even Nationals Park. Nobody got a name for that one.
Right.
So it's Nationals Park in D.C. You know, even the newer stadiums, Jacobs Field became, or the Jake, as it was known to all of us, became, I think, Progressive Field. I have no idea what they call the ballpark in Arlington now. Whatever the hell they call it in Houston, because it started as Enron Park.
And yeah,
it
became right.
Minute Maid Park. It's just, it's tiresome.
Well, even though it's not the same building anymore, it's still on the same point. Candlestick Park in San Francisco isn't Candlestick anymore. And so, yeah, I mean, even the naming rights for all of this stuff, it just gets to be a bit much. And it's confusing as hell on top of everything else.
Exactly. You know, if I say to you Joe Robbie Stadium, you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Jack Murphy Stadium, you know what I'm talking about. Mile High Stadium, you know what I'm talking about. Et cetera, et cetera. So it is depressing because everything is a, you know, XYZ company arena. FedEx or FedEx Forum,
yep,
in Memphis.
Right.
You know?
New Era is also one, yeah.
Right. How about places like the Odd or the Igloo?
Right.
You know, or the Saddle Dome.
Or Nassau County Coliseum.
The Mausoleum. Right. Brendan Byrne Arena. At least you named it for the governor of New Jersey.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Right. No, that's, you know, this one, it was way more fun. And again, everybody knew. So that's kind of sad to see. But, you know, there's always the Peabody. One of these days we'll get a second mortgage on the house and spend the weekend at the Peabody Hotel down in Memphis.
Well, that's the thing about the Peabody. I didn't want to stay there because it had too much of that old timey thing. And I'm more into, when I go on a vacation and I stay in a hotel, I want to stay someplace really modern and chic. I want all the amenities and accoutrements of the here and now. And that's why I love W Hotels so much. But, you know, the Madison had that little thing. Plus, it's 79 Madison Avenue. It makes all the sense in the world. 83 was called 83 because it's next door, and it was 83 Madison. You know, this is just – it's very disheartening. It really is. It took the wind out of my sails for my return to Memphis, whenever that may be.
Yeah.
But I was looking at the Westin, and it looks like a fabulous place, and it is very chic, and it's got all the nice little amenities and necessities you'll need. So, and it's on Beale Street, so it's not like I'm going out of my way. You know, Beale Street is a 5-minute walk from where the Madison is.
Well, I'll be
I'll
be at the Days Inn by the airport, so.
Why not just stay at the one over by Graceland?
Yeah, there you go. Oh, man, it's right next to the Waffle House off the exit. So,
yeah, scattered, smothered, and covered.
Absolutely. Got to be. And a couple of other things that are going on. Oh, and one thing that I did catch in the news today as we squirt right into the realm of politics is that, you know, I started to see these headlines, and this happens the same way every time. You go on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and you start to see headlines from the publications that are not necessarily, you know, overt bias, but slanted. And so you'll get a slant left paper that says, Rudolph Giuliani says colluding isn't a crime anyway. So I started to see this shit pop up, and I'm thinking, okay, what did he really say? What was the actual quote? And then I watched the videotape, and he said over and over again that colluding with the Russians isn't a crime anyway. And I just thought, oh, my God, we have finally done it. We have finally gone completely round the bend. These people have lost their minds. And, you know, I don't know if this means that there's some kind of an indictment coming down. I don't know what's going on right now, but they are clearly in a state of just desperation when it comes to how to deal with a Russia probe.
The funny thing is, when you think about it, the more they talk about it, the worse they make it for themselves.
Yep.
They're just digging themselves further and further and further into the hole.
Well, I think it's because they still think the game is to win public opinion. And I think that they think if they still have their base on their side, they'll be okay and they'll be able to weather all of this. What they don't seem to understand, and how Rudolph Giuliani, unless he's the most crap lawyer in the entire world, which very well may be, is I don't understand how he doesn't know that public opinion doesn't do you any good when you're standing in front of a guy wearing a black robe.
That and the fact that the base is very small overall.
It's getting smaller.
Right. I just don't know. You know, I just don't know anymore what the end game is here. I will give Mueller this much credit. He's playing it very close to the vest.
Yep.
He doesn't talk about it. He doesn't go before the cameras. He's not Comey. And right. Comey, I'll never forgive, nor pardon, or any of that. When people start to give him, they start lauding him for you know, having done this, that, and the other. No, he put himself in a very, very, very bad light. And you and I talked about it ad infinitum when it happened by involving himself with this Hillary Clinton thing just before the election, two weeks before the election.
Right.
That could not have been more suspect. And basically going up and shooting her, you know?
Right. And, you know, what people need to remember is that when a snake does something you like, it's still a snake.
Right.
And it, you know, it doesn't matter that he's saying bad things about Trump now. And the anti-Trump people love to hear that. But it doesn't mean the guy's not a snake. He is.
Let's remember original sin, you know?
Yeah, right.
Who is it? People love to be biblical about things. So who is it that led Eve to fall with Adam out of the Garden of Eden?
It was the snake. Right. So. Oh, man. So while all of that's going on, over on the far left, as we make a hard left-hand turn from the far right, we have Miss Ocasio-Cortez once again being taken to task for some of her, well, I just want to hear what you think about what's going on right now, because people are going after her, but the ones that are going after her are exactly the ones you would expect to go after her. They're the guys on the far right.
Unfortunately, but they're the ones who are also seeing her for who she is and what she is.
Right.
First of all, she has no idea what she's doing. Second of all, she is a liar. And she's proven that time and time again, even with something as arcane as her own bio, you know? Her arrogance and her flippancy towards everyone and everything in front of the camera makes her a very negative kind of candidate. Her association with Bernie Sanders, who I'll get to in a moment, and just, you know, the fact that, you know, again, I don't side with the Republicans. I don't side with anyone. But Ron DeSantis, who is a Florida Republican, said that she is, quote, socialism wrapped in ignorance. I think that is about as concise, precise, and dead on accurate as you can get. You know, her arrogance and her smugness is an amazing thing.
How old is she?
She's, I'm not sure if she's in her late 20s or early 30s.
Okay, so she's not any, okay, because some people are a lot younger than they look. She isn't, because she looks like she's about that. You're about 27, 28 years old. And I'm not one who's going to say, oh yeah, well, if you're only 27 or 28 years old, you don't know anything. There's a lot of very accomplished 27 and 28 year olds, but I don't get that vibe from her that she's one of them. You know what I mean? That she all of a sudden gets it, even though she's very, you know, tender in years.
She's 28. You were dead on accurate.
Okay, yeah. So
she's a repugnant individual. Listen to her. She's arrogant, she's smug, and she's one of those people that she gets louder when she's challenged, which tells me she doesn't know as much as she thinks she knows.
Right, right. That's always the tell. If you start to get defensive, I know I got you.
She goes on the defensive while being offensive.
Yeah.
And of course, on the personal side, I just want to see her destroyed because of her stance on Israel, as all those socialist dickheads have. They're all anti-Israeli. Oh, but that doesn't mean we're anti-Semitic. Yeah, it does, actually.
Uh-huh.
It really does. You can't separate one without the other. I'm sorry. You know, wake the fuck up. You're from New York. You should know better. But you don't, because you're also in cahoots with someone like Bernie Sanders, who the Sanders Foundation has $500,000 in its coffer and nothing to show.
Imagine that. Wow. No kidding.
Well, this thing, isn't it, John?
That doesn't seem to indicate any kind of criminal wrongdoing. Oh, wait. Yeah, it does.
Well, let's see, John. Let's talk about Bernie and Jane Sanders. Oh, yeah. Jane Sanders, who bankrupted Burlington College and still hasn't gone before court to hear her side of the story.
Uh-huh. Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. So anything the socialists have to say, I don't want to hear it. I'm not going to listen to it. I will fight against it. I will shout it down wisely with facts. And I work with facts, and I will fight with facts. You know, I will not get into a pissing match with these little bastards. What I will do is I will present the facts as they are laid out for all to see, that are for the general public realm, not something that was concocted on some right-wing paper or even a left-wing paper. I'm going to bring the facts as they stand on record.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Jane Sanders bankrupted a college. The Sanders Foundation has nothing in it. Sanders Foundation, let's see. Bernie, did you ever show your taxes? What taxes? I'm a socialist. I don't pay tax. So,
yeah.
Fuck Sanders. Oh, and you know who's another one for the fuck you of the week? Fuck Ronan Farrow and his Me Too horseshit. You know, I think it was very astutely pointed out that the next one he's going to get will probably happen about 2 weeks before the midterm elections, because that's what he's doing. He's another one who's in effect helping the right when he does this shit, you know?
Yeah, because sooner or later, you know, he's going to be the one that's out there with somebody who didn't. But the thing is, you know, the latest revelation, and he was involved in the revelation of Les Moonves, right? The
yes,
now
yes.
Embattled CEO of CBS. And, you know, I don't know. I look at what went on at Fox for so many years, and I look at you know, all of the movie studios and the problems that they've been having with, you know, the nod and a wink bull crap. And his story reads exactly like all the other ones do. And I mean, I worked for that company for a long time. Obviously I was way too far down the ladder to have any kind of personal interaction with Les Moonves. I've never met the guy. But you know, the way that that company was run was so greedy and so smarmy and so just really rudderless and awful that You know, it wouldn't surprise me to see that the guy was interested in was playing grab ass anywhere he could.
That's very true, and I can't argue with that. But here's something else, and it's food for thought, and it's not some kind of, you know, paranoia or conspiracy theorist mindset. But you notice the people that Ronan Farrow seems to go after are like his father, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, uh-huh.
He's got a problem with those people. And if I guess if I have
wait,
to...
Wait, is Frank Sinatra's Jewish?
You know, Satchel Allen or Satchel Konigsberg
right.
has a problem with the chosen people because his father happens to be, you know what, a Jew. A little coincidental, you know. You hear one rumor, you think it's just a rumor.
Right.
You hear it twice, you still probably shake it off. But when it's 3, 4, 5, and 6 people down the line, then you start to wonder.
Yeah.
Then again, there was also his half-brother or his stepbrother or whatever the fuck he is, who wrote that article bucking against him and everything that he has said because, it's like he said, he was brainwashed by our mother. And we all know Mia Farrow is not exactly playing with a deck of 52.
Oh, yeah, no, not even close.
No, no, not at all. She couldn't even play Go Fish if she wanted to.
Yeah, more than a couple of tacos short of a combination plate.
Now, let's talk about the fact that somebody went out and busted up the Donald Trump star on the Hollywood Walk of Assholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess this week's meaningless gesture toward exactly. Donald Trump.
Ooh. Like, it really bothers old Donnie, doesn't it now?
I don't know.
You know what? Your sound of exasperation says it all. Really, it does. Because all that is yet again another meaningless, empty, infantile gesture by some dipshit on the left.
Right.
No, left.
Correct. Yeah.
We gotta have some levity and shtick in here, folks.
Right. And so then, you know, the cute thing right. that came out of it was that a couple of guys dressed as Russian soldiers showed up to guard the star yeah. after they put a new one in. Now, that was clever. But just sitting there and banging away on the star with a hammer, who cares?
Now, speaking of stars, let's talk about Facebook for a moment, shall we?
Because sure.
Both have had our hackles raised by the little Jew who runs Facebook, Zuckerberg, okay? And see, I can say it, and so can John, because we are, in fact, Jews. So it's not like we're making any kind of racial epithet here.
Right.
You folks remember not too long ago, Mark Zuckerberg made a statement very clearly saying that it's basically okay for neo-Nazis and Holocaust deniers to have their say on Facebook, because it's about freedom of speech, even though anything and everything that Facebook itself deems not worthy or fitting in with their, quote, community standards is subject to being banned.
Right.
Hate speech by neo-Nazis and Holocaust deniers is okay, apparently. All right. So last week – oh, wait. It's fake news. Never mind. I'm deeming it fake news. Fake news. Real talk. Real talk here, folks.
Why? What happened last week?
The reality is Facebook stocks plummeted astronomically. Was it Thursday, Friday? And we're talking about an amazing plunge. Now, Facebook is trying to be cavalier about it and say, oh, it doesn't really affect our bottom line and blah, blah, blah. It also happened to Twitter. But because Zuckerberg is okay with Holocaust deniers, then we'll all just say, you know what? This plunge of Facebook stock never happened. That's
right,
all.
Right.
It's called Facebook plunge denial. You know, it's fair. You know, and when you think you have something like something as absolutely benign as the cover of Houses of the Holy.
Yeah. Oh.
And these cock gobblers give you what, a warning, or they throw you in Facebook jail? Which one was it?
No, I got a warning that I had violated Facebook's community standards, and they
what fucking standard, John?
Yeah, I know. Well, see, here's the thing. Let's back up a step, because you use the term free speech, and I think it's important to point this out whenever we talk about this. Facebook is not a platform for free speech, period.
I know.
Under any Yeah, it is. It's not. I mean, your acceptable speech is their purview solely. But you can analyze that just a little bit and say, OK, does it make any sense if all of a sudden you're going to take something? And I'm sure, you know, the if you don't know the Houses of the Holy cover, where have you been since 1972, 73? But yeah, it's a bunch of little kids nude, you know, face down and crawling up these rocks in, you know, what looks like this very Stonehenge-y kind of place in England somewhere. And it's very stylized and it's, you know, the color shifted and everything else.
And it's a drawing. It is not a photograph of nude children. It is a drawing.
So they put this thing up. No, actually, I think it is a photo. It's posterized, but I think that was a picture. But either way. You know, they saw this thing and I'm sure, you know, some bot, because no human being, I can't imagine that any human being working at Facebook wouldn't know what that was, but some bot flagged it for nudity. And so I get this message saying, oh yes, you violated our community standards. So then what you have to do is say, okay. And I sent them back a nasty note and said, you guys are idiots. This is the Houses of the Holy cover. It's in every record store in the world. And, you know, go to Amazon because I know you're too young to know what record stores are. So, you analyze that and you say, okay, that violates their community standards. But then you get back to what you just said, which is the Houses of the Holy cover violates their community standards, but Holocaust revisionism and Nazis don't. What? Right. What the hell kind of community are you running, by the way?
You know, before the furor began over the Holocaust deniers, you know, there are tons of these pro-Arab, very anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic, destroy Israel and kill every Jew groups and hate speech out there. And it's been running rampant for years and years and years. And it doesn't violate their community standards. But if you and I get into a tussle and you say, go fuck yourself, you cocksucker. You know, if I
then you can report me, right? And I'm all of a sudden
just pedal limp wrist. All of a sudden, yeah. I'm a douche, and I'm going to go, oh, he called me a bad name, and it triggered me. You know,
yep.
Always remember, if you're on Facebook and some knob shiner goes, "You got," then when they start their sentence with "you guys," run for the fucking hills because they're retarded.
Right?
They're one of those douchebags that's going to say that they were triggered by something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Find them, send them to me. I will beat them down.
So the good news is that, yeah, I mean, they're paying for it now. And people are actually starting to wake up to what these things are. And, you know, you and I are both still on it. So as much as we say, oh, people need to wake up and realize what's going on here. Yeah, but we still utilize the damn service. So.
Right, but we utilize it for what it's there for. You know, I utilize it. If you look at my page, it has nothing but the postings that I write for PopDose, my PopDose articles, this show. And occasionally I might, you know, say something about a song that's going through my mind, or, you know, there's never any personal stuff. There's never any political stuff. I refuse to have people get political on my wall. My wall, my rules.
Yep.
You say something that pisses me off, you're gone immediately. There are no reprisals here. I shoot you on sight. I shoot first. I don't ask questions even later. That's how I operate. This is how I roll. This is my wall. Okay? I built the wall.
And
I impact the American people for it.
Yeah, speaking of the wall, by the way, that's also in the news this week because it looks like the fight over the border wall may actually go to the point of a potential government shutdown. I don't think it's going to go that far. I think Trump's going to cave. I think he kind of has to, but he's going to kicking and screaming. He's going to take this one to the very last moment. And, you know, somebody, I don't know. I don't know what the party's going to do. This is going to be an interesting reaction. The first time that the Republicans in Congress are actually backed into a corner in opposition to Donald Trump, because so far they've been able to say, eh, it's not our deal. Let him do what he wants. But now they're in direct conflict and something's going to have to give. And they're all looking at midterm elections right now and they're scared shitless.
And meanwhile, they don't have to be because the Republicans are going to win handily.
Yeah, probably.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Because every day, more and more, I keep hearing about the Democrats just, you know, instead of building their own dam and stopping the infiltration of these communist scumbags, because they're not socialists, they're all communists.
Yep.
The infiltration of these communist scumbags, they're trying to find ways of making it work with them. No. They are helping the right further their own cause. And the Democrats I wish we could hand out shoot yourself in your own foot awards to everybody who's in Congress and the Senate right now, because we'd go broke trying to make enough up, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the same thing that we've been saying for weeks now remains true. Who is the voice? Who are the stars right now?
There is none. And you know what? At this stage, John, we should just leave it at that, because it is indeed a lost cause. This is a moment right now, and it's still only the end of July, but this is the time when we can handily say, told you so, before it happens.
Right. And it's the exact same situation as 2016, because 2016 was infinitely winnable. But all you have to do is get a decent candidate, you know? And even with Hillary there, it was a winnable race, and she blew it. So 2018, at this point, is still winnable. But they're not going to do it, because nobody's going to take the reins and make it happen.
And plus, all their candidates are shit right now.
Right, and that's what I mean. There isn't one of them out there that's going to get anybody excited.
They're absolutely garbage. And I wouldn't vote for any of them, right or left. I wouldn't vote for any of them. I mean, when you have dickheads like Ocasio-Cortez, forget it. You know, I would just as soon vote for the Republican. Just to buck against. I will do anything to buck against those people. I will fight tooth and nail against them. If I have to choose sides, I will pick the side of the righteous.
Yeah. Well, and going back to what you said about no politics on your Facebook page, I take the opposite approach, but with a little bit of a different spin, because I put all kinds of political stuff up on my page.
You put facts and knowledge up there.
But I also, 99% of the stuff that I put up there that's political is designed to get a laugh out of people. And it's the ones that don't laugh or don't get the joke or take it seriously enough to get pissed off over it, those are the ones I ban. It's like, well, you know, now you're an idiot. Get out of here.
I did last week when things were reaching, or 2 weeks ago, when things were just reaching their crescendo of ludicrousness and insanity with everyone and everything around me. I actually did say, and I quote, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I know it will court a lot of controversy and heated debate, but I don't think the housemates on Floribama Shore have a fraction of the charisma the Jersey Shore cast had / has. And I will stand my ground on this firmly. Just saying, # yeah, buddy.
There you go.
So, and you know what? One person had to pee on the charcoals.
Ugh, really?
Unless you're a professional television critic, too much time in your hands. And I just very calmly shot back and said, no. Guilty pleasures are a necessity.
It's, you know, it's funny you say that too, because how much time did it take you to come up with and post that?
I don't know, 10 seconds?
Yeah, right. So you got too much time in your hands. You had a free 10 seconds, Rob Ross. You ought to be ashamed.
Well, you know what? I also insult people who are on the left, and I want to trigger a lot of people because of my violent tendencies, and I want to make them all run into their safe space. So that way we can crowd them all together in that safe space and set it on fire while they're in it.
I got something they can cram in their safe space. So
now let's finish off politics, because, of course, Mayor Dickhead was here last week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doing absolutely nothing. But let me tell you something. Everywhere you walk, the police were everywhere. It was a joy to see them and no degenerates on my block until the cops were gone after the mayor left.
Mm-hmm.
Now the skulls are all out there again. But, of course, amongst his bloviated pronouncements, he's going to rebuild Tompkinsville Park. We don't need it rebuilt, you dumb fuck. It's in good physical shape. We need it to be junky, degenerate free, you stupid, stupid fuck. Okay? That's number one. Number two, take your Vision Zero and shove it up your ass. We all know you just want to generate revenue for the city before you fuck us again and the MTA raises the fares in 2019 and 2020, which they announced they're going to do. And this is under de Blasio's watch, okay? Now we also have in Staten Island, in my neighborhood, a bicycle pilot program. Here's the problem that I don't think I've ever hit it right on the target before. Stop trying to turn Staten Island, especially this end of Staten Island, into Williamsburg. This is not Brooklyn, okay? We have bicycle lanes here and have had them for decades, okay? We don't need these stupid bike share programs to do it. We already have enough trouble parking. We don't need valuable parking spaces taken away to put bicycles, you know? People on Staten Island who want to ride a bike already have bikes.
Yeah.
Or will buy more bikes for their kids. It's that simple. You stupid, stupid fuck. But no, you don't know the lay of the land. You don't understand Staten Island. So, of course, you want to shove this shit onto us with your fucking pilot programs because some little knob shiner in your office did well, and this is your giving him a gift. It's just that this guy knows nothing about the city except Manhattan and nothing else. You know, there we've gone over this. We went over it in the days of Overnight America once de Blasio took over, and we've gone over it every winter since. Streets don't get shoveled. People have died.
Right.
Because ambulances couldn't reach them. This is on his head. This was during his watch. And his flippancy has not taken him down yet. Yet. It's taken some of the scumbags that have worked for and under him. I want to talk about graft and you know, giving people jobs that they didn't deserve. A lot of his a lot of his cronies have all had to go before they wound up doing time.
Yeah. Well, as we get into the entertainment portion of the show, because we haven't been entertaining up till now, I mean, we cover entertainment. Big news, actually, and over these last couple of days, this has been really interesting because we figured, my lovely bride and I, that we would take some of the days off that we had and head to the movies because we're both MoviePass holders. And then we found out that MoviePass had changed as of last week the way they do business. So it had been $9.95 a month, and you could go to a movie a day as many times as you wanted during that month. You know, you're one movie a day, and you can't – the other rule was you can't go see a movie more than once, which is fine because I'm not the kind of person usually that goes and sees a movie 20 times in the theater. So that's fine. But then they added this new wrinkle that said if it's a peak movie at a peak time, they're going to charge you a premium. It's the same thing that Lyft and Uber do with surge pricing. So if you want to go see the new Mission Impossible movie on a Friday night, you can still use your movie pass, but it's going to cost you an extra $3 or whatever to go see it. And so, okay, that's fine too. And then just a couple of days ago, massive outages, major outages all over the country. People's movie passes didn't work. And they said, well, you can still use the e-ticketing. The problem is that's in about one of every 30 theaters. Most of them don't have the e-ticketing feature. They only have the, you know, the card swipe. So people are saying, okay, well, what the hell's going on? And while MoviePass was referring to it as a technical problem, it also broke in the news that they had missed a $5 million payment to one of their clearinghouses. And that was probably the cause of the outage. So it looks like MoviePass may well be going under. Either that or they're going to have to dramatically change who and what they are. And I would not lay decent odds that they will still exist a month from now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really sad.
That's a- Because I remember you were so, so, you know, into it. And, you know, I thought, well, it's a, you know, for so, if you go to the movies as often as you do, that's a fantastic value and a great way to do things. But wow, but wasn't it merging with another company or being taken over?
They were going to try. And I don't know if that's still in the offing or not. I mean, nobody expected to see this happen where it just all of a sudden didn't work anymore. And, you know, there are still, I guess now it had, for the first time that the outage happened, it still showed all the theaters and all the movies, but they all had that red check mark by them, like, you can't go see this one. And now it just doesn't show anything. My app shows no theaters whatsoever. So something extremely bad is happening. And you're right. I was all over it. I loved it. And when it worked like a charm. And it had shown no real cracks before this weekend, but now it looks like this may be, you know, just it's all collapsing. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope it is still around and they figure it out, but right now it doesn't look good.
Now, continuing on the entertainment thread, you know, the Trump Cohen tapes.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at the fact that they will never be as entertaining as Nixon and Dean.
No,
you know?
No.
Let's pretend there's a cover up. 30-second gap. Well, what if we get Haldeman? Another 60-second gap. Nah, not yeah. Gonna watch. You know,
we could do those things, but that would be wrong.
They won't have Dick Nixon to kick around anymore.
Yeah, right.
My dog Checkers. Now let's talk about something tangible. Let's actually talk about something that's on Popdose, and that would be the new single, not in the traditional sense, but two brand new songs from The Sins.
Oh, nice.
Tattooed Heart and He's the One. Now, I will say that if you're, and I'm being completely analytical and as objective as I can be because they are friends, but this isn't what I would consider groundbreaking in terms of what we've heard recently from The Sins, because they were making major leaps forward. I mean, Devil in the Details is just an exquisite piece of work by anybody.
Yep.
And that just showed it was a holy shit moment, really, when I heard it, because it was just amazingly produced, well executed, just everything about that track was right. These two songs are much more in the what you would expect from The Sins kind of vein, but here's the big but, and this is the positive but. They're a lot more rock instead of that garagey punk sound that was becoming too much of a formulaic thing with the band. That's number one. This is heavier, meatier riff rock. I would say, to a degree, and I say this with all love, Tattooed Heart is very reminiscent of early Kiss.
Influence into power pop, when that started to really take hold, some of the harmonies on Tattooed Heart really have that ring to them too.
That's the other thing. This time, Cindy Dawson is singing with a, as far as I'm concerned, because I really feel it when you go back and listen to the earlier Sins material, that she was uncomfortable, for lack of a better phrase, in front of the microphone. Like, it seemed a little overwhelming. When she delivered that performance on Devil in the Details, it was like, okay, all bets are off, and she's got her feet firmly planted in a studio setting. Her delivery and execution on this song, to me, it was very Suzy Quatro-esque. That's
yes.
What it reminded me of. And the harmonies are so on the one that it really works well. So that's why I loved this song. I thought it was a wonderful – I thought it was a masterstroke and a great way to move forward. Now, He's the One is a little bit more quote-unquote typical. But nonetheless, it still has that punchiness that the A-side – I'm going to consider Tattooed Heart the A-side. Chords, which they hadn't done before, double track vocals and harmonies. They're going into territory that they've avoided previously, and that is a very good thing.
I got a chance to listen to them both for the first time just before we started our show today. So yeah, I haven't had a chance to really go through them and parse them, but they both sound like good solid rock tracks. I'm right with you.
And I got to say, just as a friend and on a personal note, I could not be more proud of and for Cindy and Henry and the rest of the band, because there is a true conviction. I will say there are a lot of people out there who, they play in bands and they kind of have this, well, whatever, I know because I'm one, but they have a true conviction to what they do. They love what they do, and it is quite evident. And I think that also carries well. It definitely brings out why you actually wind up liking the music that The Sins performs.
Yeah, oh, I couldn't agree more. And You also, last time we talked a little bit about Django Haskins and his new album. You had the chance to sit down and have a conversation with him about that this week, which is also elsewhere on Pop Dose. What did you talk about?
You know, how the album came about, you know, what was the inspiration behind it? And will there be any more Big Star Third shows? You know, things like that. I know he's working on another record with the Old Ceremony, which should be out in the not too distant future. And it's like he said, you know, as far as another Big Star show goes, listen, if there is one, I'm there. You know, we'll all be there. It's a case of like anything else, when an ensemble is needed, when and if everybody is available at the same time. So we can only hope.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, again, still, we have this album that is just a beautiful, beautiful piece of work that's going to keep us all happy for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Shadowland, you know, it's funny. Shadowland is very much a summer album, if you think about it, yeah, in the deep sense of things, because it has that, and I don't mean, you know, boogie kind of swamp feel, but the sort of sticky, humid, it's got that true southern feel to it that I love so much. It makes me miss being down south at this time of the year.
Right.
So it's a wonderful soundtrack for the summer.
Yeah, and the last thing that we have to cover as far as the pop culture side of things goes is an interesting phenomenon that happened over the course of this week, because right after we got done talking last time around, word started to get around that Demi Lovato had overdosed again. And I don't know, I don't know enough about her, honestly, to tell you how many times it's happened in the past, only that it has. And she's very young. I don't think she's hit 25 yet. And, you know, here she is, and she's in this kind of trouble and could have died. It's not without the realm of possibility she wouldn't be the first pop star to go down that road. So the outpouring was a little bit much in a time when we have heroin addicts who end up in that same situation, you know, almost on a daily basis. And you hear the way people talk about people who are having the same kind of struggle with opioids and heroin. And initially they said with her it was heroin. Now they're disputing that and saying it was something else. But if it's fentanyl, you know what? It's the same damn thing. And it's, you know, it's just, it's prettier that way because, you know, it's either a liquid or a pill instead of something you inject into your arm. But it doesn't make any difference. And the derision that the average person gets when they end up overdosing in the street and the cops have to come and shoot them up with Narcan for the fourth or fifth time this week, it flies in the face of what people are doing with Demi Lovato. Why? Because she can sing?
First of all, she's a marginal talent. Second of all, she was sober for, I think, the last 3 or 4 years. Fourth of all, she's one of those who seeks the limelight and craves the spotlight. I'm not, and has all that money. You don't have minders to keep you away from the shit.
Right.
You know, to keep you at bay and away from drugs. I don't have any sympathy for her. I have greater sympathy for the heroin addicts who are dying in the streets left, right, and center.
Yep.
For the people who are, you know, hopelessly, painfully addicted to any kind of opium pills, you know. As much as it irritates me, and the fact is, and I can't be any more blunt about it, you know, you don't choose to get cancer, but you do choose to stick a needle in your arm or to swallow a pill or snort something. There is no gun to your head. You're not born a junkie. It does not happen that way.
Right. Right.
Okay. So enough with the baby, you know, with the kid gloves and handling everyone like a baby and being so delicate. There's no sympathy here to be had for someone like Demi Lovato. She's young. She's wealthy. She's smart enough to know better. And she's got minders. Now, you want to talk about a sad situation? Talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman, the greatest American actor that we had in generations, who we lost to a heroin addiction and overdose because he'd been clean for about 6 or 7 years when he fell off the wagon and he OD'd, you know?
Yep.
And so we're deprived of somebody like him, he who left behind 2 small children, you know? There's a world of difference, and it's not a double standard. He fucked up. He fucked up royally.
Right.
An undoable fuck up.
Well, yeah, and but even if you compare the reaction when he overdosed to when Demi Lovato did, now granted, she lived, so, you know, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, there were people coming out of the woodwork to call him a scumbag and an asshole, and, you know, how could he do that?
Absolutely out there to humiliate and besmirch his name.
Right.
No, but this is the typical hypocrisy of everybody in the here and now. Oh, because she's a young girl and she's kind of cute. Who gives a shit? She's
right.
fucking chunky. Hey, you know what? Lindsay Lohan was smoking hot. And you know what everybody did? They all wolf packed on her.
Right.
They turned on her and they ripped her to shreds at every turn and gave her no fucking peace of mind. And
yeah.
She hasn't agreed. She's gone away and she's doing her own thing. And guess what? She's still alive.
Right.
Isn't it amazing the hypocrisy and double standards at play?
Definitely. And I think the difference is that she didn't do the tearful apology. And I will tell you, there are a few things in this world that I detest more than I detest the tearful apology, because it's always bullshit, you know, and I just don't need it. I don't feel the need for somebody who I don't know to come crawling to me and saying, please forgive me. I'm so sorry. I did what I did. It doesn't come to that. And so Lindsay Lohan never did that. She didn't do the tearful apology. She told everybody, I'm going to do what I want to do. Go screw yourself. And that's why people turned on her. And all of a sudden she was, you know, she was trailer trash and a scumbag and deserved whatever she got and all of this. But you're right. She took control of her life and she went off and lived it.
Right. And she even made fun of herself at the same time. So
right.
That says a lot. You know, if you're good at deflecting, then, you know, you've got thick skin and more power to you.
Yep.
I mean, it is a shame, because I actually thought, you know, apart from the fact that she was just smoking hot, and I feel awful saying that, you look at her in Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen and you're thinking young Anne Margaret. She had that kind of talent, that kind of charisma, star quality. She could sing, she could dance, she could act.
Yeah.
She fucked up.
Right.
That's all there is to it. She fucked up and she blew it. And you know what? That seems to be the way of the modern world. You know, how many people out there get a chance and they fuck it up because it's expected of them, perhaps?
Yeah.
I don't know. But most of these people aren't worth their salt. You know, what does Demi Lovato do? She sings a couple of shitty songs that you and I have never heard, nor do we ever give a goddamn to, you know?
Right.
I'd rather hear an old Herman's Hermits record than listen to the shit that's on the radio.
Yeah, and there was something else. Somebody this week, and I wish I could remember who it was. Maybe you know, because I think it was a musician, like an old rock star, who is now going to go back and try to write a book and document the 27 Club. You know, why is it? And he wants to know why all these people died. Do you know who it is that's doing this?
I don't.
Okay, yeah, because somebody's going to go through and try and put it together.
But there's one sad note that we have to add, because it happened during this weekend. We had not one but two deaths in the wrestling world. We lost Nikolai Volkov.
Yep.
Who was 70 years old. And had been in failing health, unfortunately. But okay, you know, if he was 70 years old. And if you never got to see him when he first came along, he was the heir apparent to Ivan Koloff. You know,
right,
he was part
right.
of the Freddie Blassie stable of international stars. And his partner was, of course, the Iron Sheik. So it was the Russian and the Iranian in the early 80s. Brilliant. Absolute unadulterated genius in comedy. More importantly, we lost Brian Lawler, the son of Jerry Lawler.
Jerry Lawler's kid, yeah.
Who hanged himself while in prison after being arrested for a DUI in possession. So I don't think we need to say anything more than that. You know, Jerry the King Lawler is one of the all-time greats. He's
yeah.
a good man, a great ambassador of wrestling, and we send our deepest condolences out to him and his family and to the whole wrestling family.
Yep. Yeah, and we've all seen it happen from the outside, you know, with somebody else's family. A lot of us have seen it happen in our own family, when you get somebody who is young and makes those bad decisions and starts skidding off the rails. And, you know, the fact that everybody loves to go after the parents and say, oh, what were their failures? How bad were the parents that their kid did this? And I've seen too many families that have five kids in them, four of whom graduate from Harvard and one skids off the rails, to think that it's always as easy as blaming the parents. You know, like you said, Jerry Lawler is a good man. He has always been a good man. And I would assume, knowing, you know, nothing about him beyond what everybody knows about him, that he was probably a damn fine father. And sometimes shit just happens.
You know, and the thing is, Brian was an adult.
Right.
It's that simple. It wasn't like he was a 17-year-old or, you know, this was someone, I believe he was in his late 30s.
Right.
Or
yep.
40s. So, you know, it's a tragedy, and that's all that needs to be said about that.
Indeed.
Now, let's go after one of my favorite subjects, Yoenis Cespedes. We're going to talk about sports since we're talking about wrestling. So the motherfucker comes up, his first bat since April, okay? In a game against the Yankees, his second at bat, he hits a home run, and then he can't run.
Okay.
Heel problems that allegedly have been plaguing him all along, and that's why he's had so many other medical problems that, you know, precluded him from playing baseball last year, the first year of a 3-year contract. So they hold a press conference this week where he says he's going to go have the surgery on the heels to correct this once and for all. So he's out for the rest of the season. Okay? So that's now two seasons where we've paid for him to not play baseball. Now, I don't know if you remember, but a year or two ago, he made a statement in an interview saying he wanted to finish his career in Oakland. I have an idea. Now that the Mets have traded Jairus Familia to the Oakland A's, thank God, why don't you trade him out to Oakland? Why don't you trade Cespedes out to Oakland so he doesn't play baseball for them either?
Right. Yeah. He doesn't even need much in return.
No, you know what? Just take the fucking contract. That's all. Take the fucking contract. You mean to tell me, John, this guy signs a 3-year deal. He hasn't played baseball for 2 of the 3 years. You can't divest yourself and void the contract?
Right.
That's bullshit. That's total bullshit. Now, tomorrow's the trade deadline. Like I said, the Mets got rid of Jairus Familia. Thank God. Happy as a clam about that. They traded Asdrubal Cabrera on Saturday to the Philadelphia Phillies. People are losing their shit. He's 32 years old. This was like his third year, fourth year with the Mets. He wanted off the team last year and went to the press about it. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, right.
Simple. Go. You're a free agent and you're 32 years old. Go. Go away. Now, I hope they don't make any more trades. There's really nobody else that they need to get rid of. I do not have a problem with Jose Reyes. Let him finish the season and let him retire as a New York Met and say thank you for at least playing most of your career as a Met. I love David Wright. David Wright is what every baseball player should be. David Wright has not played baseball since 2015 because of a bad back, a degenerative disc disease. However, he's still on the Mets' payroll. He's got that very large contract. The Mets are still paying Bobby Bonilla for not playing for the Mets for the last 20 years. Okay? Actually, more than 20 years. But the point is, David Wright should step up and say, you know what? We've got to restructure this because I'm not playing. I'll take a front office job. I'll take a coaching job.
Yeah.
You know? Well, he should officially retire.
Since we're into sports, you got to give me a second to do my old man yells at cloud routine, because I'm actually going to do something I promised I would never, ever do, which is bitch about something on the internet. So, you know, if you, again, spend enough time on Facebook or Twitter, you will see these lists. Everybody's got lists. Oh, the rankers of this and that and the 25 greatest of these guys of all time. And as football season is now, thankfully, I guess preseason starts next weekend. So just, I cannot wait. I'm jonesing seriously for football. So we're starting to see a bunch of these lists come out of the all-time greatest this and that in football. And the problem with these things, well, the problems, because they are manifold, start with the fact that you will get two in any list like that, whether it's the top 25 or the top 50 or whatever, you will get two nods to the past, and that's all. So no, nothing great ever happened before, like, 1990. Probably 2000, but really, you know, nothing ever happened. History didn't start until 1990. And so all these guys are, you know, brand new, and they forget some of the older guys who really did some amazing things. But every so often, there is such a glaring omission, and this time it was my team that took it, that I have to say something about it, because newarena.com, I don't even know who the hell they are, but they've got something to do, I guess, with sports coverage, decided to rank the top 24 all-time quarterback wide receiver duos in the NFL. Top 24 of all-time quarterback wide receiver duos in the NFL. Jim Kelly and Andre Reed are not on the list. Son of a who? What monkey? What moron? What total knob is putting this thing together and leaves Kelly and Reed off this list?
Did they at least have Namath and Maynard?
Yes, Namath and Maynard are on there. But here's the other thing: so were Joe Theismann and Art Monk. Joe Theismann was broken in half halfway through his career. You can't tell me you would rather have him and Art Monk out there than Jim Kelly and Andre Reed, who never played a game in anybody else's uniform.
Jesus.
I know.
Well, look, it's this website that I don't even remember the name of it, but they wrote some fucking article, and they appear on Facebook. To me, they're sports clickbait, where it's like, when will Rob Manfred step in and do something about the Mets? And everybody, even non-Mets fans, are saying, what the fuck are you people talking about? You know, what have the Mets got to do with anything? Why? Because they've paid for players that aren't successfully playing. Look at the Washington Nationals.
Right.
You know, they've got a cadre of all-star players who haven't gotten them one goddamn win in a what do you call it, in a playoff series. You know,
crazy.
They're turning into the Buffalo Bills and Minnesota Vikings of baseball.
That's right. Go 0 for how many? Oh, geez, it's never going to get any better, man. It's all crazy.
But it's not even a goddamn World Series.
Yeah.
You know, they just fuck up right after the first playoff sequence.
Right.
What is it? Do they even name them now? Not the wild card game, because Washington always wins the division.
Right. And then there's the divisional series and then the championship series.
Right. And they blew all of them. All of them. They'll be winning 3-0. Well, that's it. Kiss of death.
Right.
We'll get your watch and have done with it. So.
I believe we have wound our way all the way up to the In Our Heads segment of the program. And I'm going to, you know, again, we haven't done a music in our heads. We did one last week, but it had been a few weeks before that.
And
I want to go away from it again for just a second, because something occurred to me this week, and this does actually have a musical connection to it as well. But I was thinking about somebody made a reference to a piece of art that had been banned. And I started thinking about that because of the artwork that we had that we were most familiar with being banned were books and records. And anytime that word came around, there was always some preacher holding a Bible standing behind it all. And, you know, I lived through, I don't know how many devil scares in my first 25 years. They were everywhere. Every time you turn around, something else, the devil was doing something else. And maybe it's because he hasn't shown up in the movies. You know, maybe it was The Omen and the Exorcist that got everybody thinking about it. So we're looking for devils everywhere, and that hasn't happened in a while. But you had, you know, the backward masking thing. And by the way, there's also a great article elsewhere on PopDos about backward masking. So you had that, and you had, it went all the way. Every time some new fad came out, it was the devil that made it popular. And I remember the last one, and I got such a laugh out of this, when they started around 1993 saying that Pokemon was turning children to the devil. And I thought, you know, really? The devil's that desperate, huh?
What Pokemon was propaganda by the Japanese to turn children against the capitalist machine.
Right.
That was the whole point of Pokemon.
While getting filthy, stinking rich in the process.
Chim Pokemon.
Yeah, right.
The main objective.
Got to catch them all.
The primary main objective. That's it.
But it was, you know, it was a predictable thing. There was always going to be something else. I mean, you know, the backward masking on the Led Zeppelin albums, ostensibly, and in Stairway to Heaven and all that. And of course, it's never on a deep album track. You ever notice that? The backward masking is always on the hit. So I don't know why.
There's no backward masking on something like Out on the Tiles?
Yeah, right. As far as I know, I mean, nobody's ever checked. Maybe it's all, you know, maybe it's rife with give your life to the devil. It could be everywhere in there. But I want to go back into that and the things that you remember, because there were these videotapes that used to circulate. And I had a friend who used to get this stuff. And they were full of, guys telling you all the stuff the devil was into and was doing to you. So where did our devil scares go?
Well, they're a reality now. I mean, you look at the evangelicals, and I'm using the word in quotation marks because, first of all, there's nothing evangelical about any of these fucking people.
Yeah.
Not a one. From Jerry Falwell to Jim Baker to Joel Osteen to Creflo A. Dollar.
Oh, God, that guy.
You know, all of these cock gobblers are criminals, charlatans, you know, false prophets, you name it, you know. I am a false prophet. God is a superstition. The last devil I saw was Al Pacino.
Yo, The Devil's Advocate. What a great movie.
He was perfect. And Subsequently, he hasn't really been seen since.
Yeah.
You know, of course, everybody wants to say the devil sits in the Oval Office right now. Some want to say the devil sits in the Kremlin right now.
He's too dumb to be the devil. He couldn't be. He couldn't handle the job.
This is what I think is, you know where the devil is? Right now, he's playing the greatest karmic joke on all of us. Look, God is an absentee landlord right now.
Yeah, right.
Somebody had to step in and do the bidding. And Mr. Scratch, Mr. Zero, whatever you want to call him, Lucifer, Satan, Beelzebub, he decided, I'm going to fuck with everybody since God's on vacation right now. I'm going to put Donald Trump in the White House. Let's see what happens. Let the cards fall. Because it's free will. And, hey, we made a choice. We made America great again. We MAGA'd.
Sure we now, did. Look how great it is out there.
There's no devil in the music because you've done that theme so many times. It's beyond parody.
Well, and that's
an unlistenable joke. So it's been spent. That's the problem. All of it's been spent.
Really?
And if you look at movies, it's the same shit over and over again. You get 50,000 permutations of Saw movies and all kinds of mad butchery. And then they try to go for creepy things a la that Paranormal Activity.
Right, yeah.
Every goddamn movie has somebody getting pulled right out of the camera shot from behind. You know, dragged along the floor. All of a sudden they get pulled out and you see them go into the darkness. 50,000 Fast and Furious movies, 50,000 fucking Shades of Grey movies.
There's superheroes.
Right. And all these goddamn, you know, comic book movies. Yep. So there's no room for the devil. There's no room, but there's also no room for originality. You know, whatever original comes along seems to get overshadowed by either the big box office or the remake, the reboot. Why is there going to be – okay, you want to know where there's the devil is? He's right now using his machinations to formulate the new reboot of Charlie's Angels.
Well, they're not doing that again, are they?
Yeah, with someone so heinous like Kristen Stewart, the worst fucking actor in the world. She's shit. She has zero charisma, zero expression. She has about as much range as a Daisy air rifle. She can't act her way out of a fucking paper bag. There's only one person on there of choice, Elizabeth Banks. She is gorgeous. She's talented. She's adorable. She's got all of the right to be one of the angels. But there's no point in doing this. You did two of those fucking movies already.
Yeah.
You and the only reason why you watch them is so you could, no offense, anybody. The only reason why you watch it is to either beat off to Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore, or Lucy Liu, or all three. That's the only reason to watch those fucking movies.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, they did have a heck of a storyline, I'm told. So, but yeah, that's true. And all of that is absolutely accurate. Maybe that's what the devil has given us is the sequel. But
With the reboot.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, and now they're starting to reboot a lot of the old Charlie Band stuff. Were you into any of that, like Reanimator and all those really wacky comedy horror movies?
Nah, just Evil Dead.
Yeah, Evil Dead was fantastic. But yeah, it really did set the tone. And Charlie Band is an interesting cat to kind of check out and delve into the stuff that he's done. And now I guess they're going back and rebooting a bunch of his movies as well. But, you know, he was such a unique voice and an important hand in the making of those movies. I don't know how you can remake something like that without him.
It's kind of like the whole concept of remaking, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street without Robert Englund as Freddy, first of all.
Right.
You know, or remaking, you know, the reboots or reimaginings of the Jason Voorhees tales.
Yep.
And Rob Zombie being stupidly bold enough to try and resurrect Michael Myers, you know? It's like, dude, this is why you suck.
Right. It's never going to feel
go
right.
Go back to Boston Dead Guy, okay?
But do you was there ever an album that you remember or something like that? Because, you know, going back to the Pokemon thing, when they blamed the devil for that and started telling, you know, advising good Christian folk not to allow your kids to play the Pokemon games, I expected it to happen with the smartphones when they, you know, when Angry Birds became, because all that game is, well, I have to act like I'm doing something important, even though I don't actually have to do anything. And, you know, it takes, you know, if you can get the kids the theory goes, if you can get the kids to pull their faces away from the Pokemon game or whatever, then maybe you'll get, draw them back to church. Doesn't work, but it's an interesting concept anyway. But there was so much of that stuff. And, you know, whether it was records or card games or whatever, I just wonder what happened to them. And were there favorite moments for you when they blamed something on the devil and you went, really? That too, huh?
Oh, my favorite. I'll give you the moment of moments that made me laugh, and it makes me laugh even to this day. When in 1985, when I was working at a record store, we got in a shipment of baseball jersey rock t-shirts, and we got the brand new Kiss shirts. And Kiss was suddenly spelled out to mean Knights in Satan's Service.
Yeah, right.
That was the all-time. I was at least, I don't even know how many years removed from my Kiss fandom. But I looked at that and I remember showing it to everybody in the store. And it was a collective outburst of hysterics. And I mean hysterics. And not long after that, we found out that it turned out that those were fake shirts. Those were all bootlegs.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Number one. Number two, when you talk to the two chief rabbis of KISS, Chaim Witz and Stanley Harvey Eisen.
Uh-huh.
It is very clear, as per Paul Stanley, that KISS spelled out is Kaddish is so swell. For the Jews.
Nice. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, I remember them going after some bands and thinking, really? Those guys too? You know, it's like, yeah, the devil's going to get to all of us through Wang Chung or something like that. You know, that's the back doorway to get to everybody.
Boy George was the devil in the comic.
Yes, yes.
He was one of those godless homosexuals too.
But you made a good point when you talked about the fact that, you know, it became a parody of itself when they kept blaming everything on the devil. Everything is the devil, the devil, the devil. And they never understood that that's why Ozzy Osbourne was putting all of that shit on his album covers. It was a parody. It was already a parody. They just didn't know it. They weren't in on the joke yet.
The problem is people don't have a sense of humor.
Right.
The problem is that we don't have any of that anymore to work with or to have fun with.
Yeah.
You know, the PMRC, all of that stuff. We don't have common enemies of merit, you know, tangible enemies. You know, don't forget, Tipper Gore led the PMRC.
Right.
And what party was she part of?
Yeah, well, and Lieberman at the time was still a Democrat, and he was also involved, not obviously in the PMRC, but he was instrumental in getting the hearings underway. So, yeah, that kind of schmuckery, unfortunately, tends to resurface, so we'll keep our eyes open for it. Interestingly, one last to leave you with on that point, which is the fact that Jeff Sessions announced today the formation of a religious liberty task force in the Justice Department. And considering he's Jeff Sessions, honestly, that move scares the shit out of me.
What exactly does religious liberty stand for? What's the point of this? What is the prelude to why this is being set up?
That's a good question. I don't know. And I'm trying to figure it out. The only thing that smells right to me so far is they want to start taking an active role in things like the Hobby Lobby lawsuit, where they were going to force those good Christian folk to pay for health insurance that allowed women to have abortions and birth control pills and shit. And I think that's probably what this is about, is saying that anybody who is a Christian can effectively use any means necessary to tell you that you can't have an abortion.
As long as it has something to do with keeping those godless communists out of office, I'm okay with it. God, guns, guts, and glory.
That's right. We will delve further into that one when we get a better idea of what the hell Sessions is up to on our next broadcast. And I know we've got more stuff coming up, too. What are you writing about this week?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Because Wednesday morning, look for a very lengthy, I tried so hard to be objective, and I was, the review of the upcoming book on Chris Bell, written by Rich Tupica. 5 years of painstaking research to get as much as he could, so that way he could try to, you know, take away some of the layers of mystery about Big Star's founder, you know. And there are some really interesting revelations, nothing groundbreaking or shocking per se, but revelations that don't hit you until after you read it, like, oh, okay. It's a great book.
Excellent.
It's the perfect counterpiece to Rob Jovanovich's wonderful, originally 2004, biography of Big Star. It was redone and revisited after Alex Chilton's passing, and the making of Nothing Can Hurt Me.
Outstanding. All right. Well, I'll have a couple of words for you next week as well about Robbie Krieger, because he and I are set to have a conversation a little bit later on this week. So we'll find out what goes on there.
Ask him if he still has the SG.
Okay. All right. Will do. Well, Rob Ross, have yourself a wonderful week, my friend. And we'll get together and hash it out again next time.
Yes, indeed, my friend. Be well, stay well, God willing, if Jeff Sessions doesn't do something to fuck us all up.
Yeah.
We will do this all over again on our 5th anniversary show. See you all next week, folks.